think, shall we touch tonight briefly on the subject of what we could call roughly, and has been called roughly, the great hang-up tonight, huh? I mean, there has hardly been a Broadway show in the last 500 years, at least an American Broadway show, that did not deal with the problem, the hang-up. The man-woman hang-up, which... oh, come on now. It's funny how immediately... All you have to say is the man-woman hang-up, and immediately everybody perks up their ears. And about 65% of them are mad before I even say anything. I can hear the sound of pens scratching as letters are being written even before we say it. The big hang-up, you know, the man-woman hang-up. There's nobody there's no one with soul so dead who does not know what I'm talking about. It's there. And I don't know at what age you begin to understand there is a man-woman hang-up. Now, that's a very interesting question there in itself. At what point do you begin to realize that there is some kind of a basic controversy? Well, let's put it this way. There is some kind of a conflict. What's the word? Conflict? That's a good word. It's used consistently. Have you noticed that in most of the lady magazines, for example, there are thousands of articles yearly on 49 ways to have a fantastic marriage? Oh, yes, that's a lead article usually. Or 74 ways on how to have a beautiful wedding. Now, they hardly ever in those articles even mention men. They talk about marriage and wedding, and they talk about the silverware, and they talk about how to furnish your little love nest, and they talk about where to send the kids and all that stuff, but they don't mention men in those. Of course, then on the other hand, in the male magazines, they don't mention women hardly in connection with marriage. You know, they hardly ever mention marriage. It's very difficult to find a male magazine that ever even touches on it, except maybe with a scornful curl of the lip. Yes, it's very definite. So you've got this basic controversy going. Now, guys have been facing this for 1,000 years or more, and they have done many things about it. How many of you ever read Vardis Fischer? Vardis Fischer wrote a thing called, what was it now? It was in one of his Testament of Man series. It had to do with the birth of Adam. Yeah, was it called The Birth of Adam? And it was the first guy who crawled out of the rock. You know, at that point, it was a matriarchy, and the women were goddesses. And men were slaves, terrible. They were the next thing to animals. And he crawled, and they worshipped the moon. The moon was worshipped as the great mother goddess in the sky. Well, one day, he's scrunched down on the bank of a stream there, and he's trying to figure out which way to turn, and all the great big... goddesses were running the camp behind them, and he looks up and he's taking a look at the sun, and day after day he's looking at the sun, and then one day he decided that the sun was the god, and it wasn't a goddess at all, it was a god. And he said, of course this was heresy, so yes it was, and immediately he was in trouble right up to his hocks, but he was the first one who made an objection, and so hence the title The Birth of Adam. Well, now, this thing has been going on for a long time, so don't think that only Albee has worked about it, and don't think that only O'Neill has struggled with this thing. What do you think Melville was talking about when Ahab was in the front end of that boat, and they were going 16,000 miles out to sea, and he was chasing that white whale? What do you think he was after there? What do you think was bugging him? I mean, what's bugging anybody in a way when it gets way down deep? I mean, one of the Russians are always teed off. Have you looked at their women lately? Sing it out, man. Oh, I'm gonna drink muddy water. Gonna sleep in the kitchen with my feet in the hole. Gonna go down to that crummy old rotten stinking river. Drink muddy water, baby. You done made me do it. Oh. Well, all right, there you go, you know. He's singing it out. Well, I'm... we might as well... of course, the battle between men and women has taken a new... a genuinely new phase, has come into being in the last maybe 15 or 20 years. And this is the new reversal of the roles, which you've heard discussed from time to time, I'm sure, and I've even seen portrayed on the stage, although generally it's not admitted when it's portrayed on the stage. But nevertheless, it is. The last season saw the first really fist-fighting female to be seen on the American stage. She fist-fought, did you know about that play? Belted the guy, knocked him down, he got up and he belted her, and then she knocked him down again, and he knocked her down. They had a genuine pool room fist-fight. There was nothing else to it. It was not a man fighting a lady. It was a pool room belting brawl. Well, this is not just theoretical. For those of you who might have formed your identity too long ago to understand that things have changed, we are getting reports from all kinds of outlying precincts. Here, for example, is a report from a kid in school. He says, "Dear Shepherd, you have been doing a recent series of programs concerning the male and female reversal of roles, i.e. men becoming feminine, women becoming more masculine. I wish to report an event that occurred in our school recently here on Long Island. It seems that two girls began fist fighting in the hall one morning between periods. They were sent to the office, lectured, and released. But for the next 2 days, they had several more scraps, and both finally were suspended from school. I asked a few of my friends what they had been fighting over, and they told me that the girls had been fighting for the past 2 weeks over a boy." He said the boy was very coy about it and said, "Oh, they're just silly girls." Well, now, things are changing there a little bit. There's no question about it. I remember several fistfights that took place in the halls of my benighted high school, but I do not recall any fistfights between chicks over a boy. Never. No, this is a new twist, and apparently, it's not that unusual. So the reversal of roles is... By the way, the boy apparently wore very fluffy yellow sweaters and had a tendency to wear very skinny pants. Very skinny pants. You don't mind if I do this once in a while in the midweek, do you? I'm a born blues singer, I'm telling you. Bad one, but born. This is becoming, and so tonight the subject of our program will be the hang-up. We've already introduced it, so you know what it is. And everywhere, it's not only in the American scheme of things or in what we call the American way of life. You know, no matter where you go in the world, whenever their world changes there, and certainly the 20th century is wreaking changes upon every civilization, wherever you go, it is always referred to as a kind of a cop-out by those people in those countries as, "Wow, we're getting more American. Terrible." Well... there might not have been American there for 150 years, but they're getting more American. And somehow, Americans are identified with the 20th century. It's like our century. Literally, we own it, we created it. And so, whenever a country begins to feel some 20th century influences, like, guys got cars, or somebody buys beer in cans instead of old stone crocks, all kinds of... This is referred to as an Americanism. Of course, what it really is a 20th century thing, that's all. Now, I'm sure that back in the 19th century, which was owned lock, stock, and barrel by the British, they owned it, that all over, everywhere you went, there must have been people deploring the Britishisms. Wherever you went, "Oh, sure, this is a... They did it here. Are you aware that large numbers of people in America in the late 1870s and late 1880s, writers were always poking fun at the people in America who affected British mannerisms. Oh, George Ade did it consistently. It was done by many writers of the 18th century here in America. And it was done by writers in India. They were constantly yelling about the fact that a lot of the Indians were affecting Britishisms. Well, of course, let's face it, the British owned the 19th century. It was their century. They owned it. Their baby. Whenever you talk Victorianism, this is British. And everywhere you go in the world, they use the term Victorianism. They'll say the Victorian Age. Now, they even say it in China, for crying out loud, which means, of course, the age that was owned by the British. Speaking of Victorianism, this is WOR, AM and FM, New Yorkie. And so we own this century. And whether we have created it or not is beside the point. Anything that happens in France that is bad, they say it's because of the Americans. It gets pretty silly. Recently, they had a big poll in one of the Scandinavian countries, and all the chicks are on the muscle there. And, And so they came out and made a flat statement that chicks are getting too American. Of course, none of them had ever been to America, but it doesn't make any difference. It's part of the 20th century. Nobody quite knows what to do about it. Time magazine recently had a whole gigantic cover story about the big hang-up. Did you see it? That famous three-letter word. Oh, yes, it's big enough to become a cover story now. And a big issue has been raised. And each succeeding paragraph in that article, if you read it, contradicted the one before it. They didn't know whether they were for the reversal of roles or whether they were against it. And they kept constantly shifting back and forth. And no one quite... It's a wild thing to watch. Now, here's a little bit that came out of the New York Times from England. Reverend Leslie York, vicar of Christ Church, told the congregation at a priory church here recently that marriage was as hazardous as driving a car through London. Well, I don't know whether he's making a rotten remark about London traffic or whether it's about marriage. Now, you see, he's like most vicars, he's cleverly covered his path there. So if a parishioner leaps up, "Sir, are you saying something against marriage?" He's going to look him right in the eye and say, "Ah, I was speaking of the damnable British traffic." Now, of course, that ends that. And, on the other hand, if the British Automobile Club jumps on him, I'm speaking of the laxness in marriage. And so you can go either way. But tonight, we might as well bring it right out in the open here. Do you want me to bring it out in the open, friends? I can hear bells ringing and everything back in master control. What is it? I haven't said anything. I mean, I'm just going to talk about Valentine's and things here. That's all. Well, it's funny, for all of the things that we talk about constantly, I'm not talking about this show particularly or my program. I'm just talking about in general. There are some things that we skirt around, but we don't really talk much about. Like death. We constantly sort of skirt around it. We sort of dart in the bushes, and nobody really talks about it. It's just there. It's something you don't talk about. Birth is another thing. People are constantly sending back and forth cards that kids were born and one thing and another. But hardly anyone really talks about this phenomenon. And there again, on the other hand, is the thing of weddings, which I think fits in the same category of a gigantic human ritual. It's a thing. It really is a big, rocking thing. And it's hardly ever talked about. Well, I'm sure that each one of us, in our own way, has had certain reactions and has observed certain things, often unspoken, most generally unspoken, about weddings. We have all gone to weird weddings. And usually when you walk out of a weird wedding, you don't say much. You go down, you're flicking the cake off of your mustache, and you're trying to clear your head after that cheap champagne, and you're walking along in your rented coat, and you prefer to forget the whole thing. Have you noticed after a wedding, hardly anybody talks about it? At a wedding, they don't talk about that at all. They sit around and they talk about Uncle Fred and the stock market. They talk about everything. Nobody even mentions the wedding, except once in a while they say, "Isn't Margie pretty today? She's such a beautiful..." As if that makes it somehow okay because Marge is pretty today. Well, The vicar, you see, was laying down the truth there, because in the 20th century, along with this reverse of roles, has come a whole new set of problems that are not covered in the marriage manuals. I don't know whether many marriage manuals handle the problem of the chick coming home with a leather jacket and hitting the guy with brass knuckles. You all don't laugh. You know, I know a case. I'm sorry. I'd like to tell you some stories. But on the other hand, marriage manuals do not cover the case of the guy who always wants to try on his wife's hats. Seriously. This is a problem, you know, that they just don't talk much about. And yet, nevertheless, it is a growing phenomenon. Now, there have been two occasions that I have witnessed, wild, strange weddings, which I will never forget. They will remain with me all of my life. And one of them happened when I was at a very tender age. Now, you know how it is. You live in your life. Now, we accept certain mores. Each one of us, whether we know it or not, we accept a certain set of standard behavioral patterns on the part of the people around us. That's why we've got them around us. They're friends. We know them. We think we know them all, you know, and all about them. They are a certain way. They do certain things. Sure, Charlie may be a little nuts, but you know about it, you know, and you accept it. That's why he's your friend. Well, there's a certain little nest quality of people who are all together. I don't know what you could call it. I suppose you can call it a cultural interleaving of various likes and dislikes and mores and attitudes and religions, one thing. And so you have your little circle of friends. Okay? Are we set there? Well, I'm this kid. And there were about a half dozen of us that were thicker than flies at a hog killing. We were really thick, you know, because we had gone to the same high school. We all lived within about a block and a half together. We played on the same softball team. We all played on the same football team. And we were very, very close friends. You know, the kind where you're constantly over at each other's houses. You know, that kind of thing. And you know all about them. You know, you know the whole scene. And so this was in my last year in high school. I will never forget this scene. It was about at that period. It was spring, just about this time of the year. And, the sap was running full and rich and strong in the veins of young America. And there we were, you know, we're seniors in high school, and there were about four of us guys that took to hanging around together really closely. And at that time, three of us were amateur radio operators, and we were suddenly losing a great deal of interest in ham radio and finding a lot of other interests that had nothing to do with grid bias voltages. Had nothing whatsoever to do with Class B finals. And so what we would do, we took to riding around in Flick's car. Flick had a car, and he had this old Chevy, and we would ride around at night, usually at twilight, and we would look at chicks, literally. We would ride around and holler out of the window at chicks. Now, there was a local expression for that. Yes, and I'm sure you've never heard it, because I've never heard it again, but it was a local expression, and the expression was scragging. We're going scragging tonight. Well, all that meant was riding around and hollering, "Hey, baby, hey, whoa, hey, hurry up, let's go, hey, baby, hey, whoa, woo!" And of course, the chicks would turn and walk the other way, and we hollered, and we go around the corner, and then suddenly Schwartz, "Oh, boy, wow, look at those three up there on the porch. Hey, baby, hey, hey, whoa!" And that was the scene, you know. It was scragging. So we would ride around, and then we would finally wind up at Maddox's All-American Diner and drive-in, where we would have a black cow, which consisted of root beer and ice cream and a hot dog, and then we would holler at the car hops. Whenever Maddox was looking the other way, you know, the chicks would come past. She'd say, "Is there anything I could do for you?" And then all of us, "Ha, ha, ha, hey, baby, ha, ha." Oh, you know, the whole scene. You know what I'm talking about. Just, you know, it's American life. What can you say? So we are scragging. We all know each other very intimately. And once in a great while, there would be a great roar of applause. One of us would have a date. And all the other three guys would talk about this endlessly. "Hey, where are you going to take Pearl, Flick? Ha, 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 whoa." And, of course, it was exceedingly innocent. Flick would take Pearl to the Orpheum Theater. And after that, Flick would take her to Maddox's drive-in and be very circumspect in the drive-in while they're bringing the hot dogs and the black cows. And that was Well, I should say that was romantic life in the Midwest, with the sound of the blast furnace going and the sound of the bowling alleys booming on all sides. And, of course, at that time, the war was going on. So, you know, it was another world. And so one day, it was in the spring. We were about to graduate. It must have been about May, something like that. And there were the four of us, myself, Schwartz, Flick, and Bolus. And we would take turns. One time, Bolus, the guy who drove, of course, was at a terrible disadvantage because he couldn't yell out of the window and all that stuff. And so we would take turns. That was another big kick of the period, was driving. It was a big thing. So we would take turns driving Flick's car. And one night it would be Bolus, the next night it would be me, and all the while, and all the rest of her hollering out the window, and, hey, oh, hey, hey, baby. And, you know, this is the way it went. Every night throughout the spring, all the while the war cannons were thundering in Europe, and all, you know, the guys that we knew who were older than us, all of them were in the army. And we were all about to go in the army immediately after we got out. That was the whole thing. We were all about to go in. And it was just very harmless. So one day, out of the blue, and remember, these are guys I have known since, well, I knew Flick since I was in first grade. I got to know Schwartz when he was in second grade. He moved to our school. Bolus had lived there ever since I had known there. He was there all the time, you know. And Flick, Schwartz, Bolus, myself were just like that. We'd known each other since we were about seven. One day, out of the blue, I am coming home with Bolus, and we are hitchhiking home from school. And Bolus said to me, just out of the blue, he said, listen, Gene, I want to invite you to my wedding. Boom! As far as I knew, Bolus had not had a date since our sophomore year. I'll never forget her. Her name was Iona. Boom! Like that, the bomb landed right on top of my head. I said, "Your what? My wedding." I said, "What? What? What?" And there we're both standing there with skin trouble, hitchhiking, you know. You know, we're in high school. I said, "Your what? Your what?" Well, my wedding. And just then a great big A&P truck stopped, and we're sitting in the front seat, and I'm the truck, you know, roaring. And here's Bolus sitting in the middle of the truck driver over there. We're going home. And, you know, how can you ask her, what do you mean? What do you mean, wedding, wedding? And he was very straight about it. Bolus did not have a sense of humor. Very straight. And so we ride all the way home in a deathly silence. And the truck stopped finally, and I get out of the truck, and Bolus is there. And I says, "When is it, Bolus?" He said, "Oh, the week after we graduate." The week after we graduate. Who is it? There is a long, pregnant pause, and Bolus said, as if he's trying to remember. Yeah, he says, her name is Anne. I said, "Anne?" We didn't even know it. I said, "Anne, Anne, who? Anne, Anne." He said, I think she lives in East Chicago. I think she lives in East Chicago. I said, yes. Yes, that was the next town. So, yes, congratulations, Bolus. It's the only thing. It's the first time I ever said that in my life. You know, there's the first kid I knew that. Congratulations, Bolus. He said, okay. Well, look, listen, I'll call you after supper. I want to do something with a... He's a ham, you see, so he cuts out, and I go home stunned. And about 5 minutes later, I call up Flick on the phone. I say, "Flick, have you heard?" He says, "Yeah." I said, but, "Who is she?" He says, "I don't know." I said, what is this? I says, "I don't know." I said, "But has Schwartz heard?" He says, "Schwartz is laying on the floor in shock. He's laying down there by the radiator in shock." I said, "Does anyone heard of her?" He says, "Nope." I said, "Well, are you going, Flick? Is he straight? Is he telling the truth?" He said, yeah, he is. His mother told me, too. Oy, what do you do? Well, I hang up the phone, you know, immediately all kinds of thoughts go through my mind, you know, hanky-panky, you know. And then I can't believe it, you know. No, this is impossible. You know, I know Bolus as well as I know me. You know, no, this is ridiculous. Absolutely. Well, it went like that for about 4 weeks. Nobody knew what to say, and all of us were invited to Bolus's wedding, every last one of us. was invited to bowl. So there must have been about 15 kids, you know, who knew him to one degree or another, and the whole neighborhood is invited to Bolek's wedding. Well, I took to staying away from his house. This was very spooky, you know. Up to this point, I'm at his house every night. We're yelling on the, we're on 160-meter phone, you know, the whole thing, and we're, you know, it was very, all of a sudden, he was another kind of guy. He was a completely different breed of animal. It was like, suddenly, my friend, who had been a squirrel, is now a camel. You know, what are you going to do, you know, is that, and with nothing in common, nothing whatsoever. And so, we're at school, we're eating our lunch out in the back, and everyone was kind of embarrassed. You know, Schwartz is laughing around, and I'm flicking a bit. And every time Bolus would come over, someone said, well, let's go down to the igloo. How are you? I said, let's go to the igloo. Well, we get to the igloo, and Bolus sort of follows along afterwards, and he sits down. He was aware, of course, of his new status completely, and he took to accepting it. And now Bolus is eating by himself in the corner. And once in a while, Bolus would say, listen, you know that T-20 that you said that you had down the basement? I want to try that in the buffer. Do you mind if I come over and borrow the T-20? I'd say, yes, Bolus, I will be pleased to lend you my T-20. Very pleased to lend you my T-20. Please watch the filament voltage on that. If that comes home with a burned-out filament, don't come crying to me because it's a good T-20. Do you understand, Bolus? Okay, all right, I'll come over and get it tonight. And then I would say, well, I will leave it with my mother, because I didn't want to get into any involvement with him. Well, finally, the big day arrives, and we graduate. And you know how this is. We're all standing around with the little hats on our heads and the gowns and sweating, and everybody is singing, hey, Mom, we'll fight for you. And Mr. Spoon is up there handing out the diplomas, and the whole bit is going on, and then we're shuffling around. And in the excitement of that, it kind of died down, you know, the idea of Bolus getting married. And for about 2 days before the graduation, Bolus is brought back into the crowd, because now we're all involved in all this thing, you know. And, everybody's all excited and all involved and everything. And Bolus is wearing a little funny hat and the whole bit. And then, finally, the time came. We are out, and about, 2 days later, I'm walking around. I'm feeling, you know, I've graduated. I'm now 1A. Everybody's the army's waiting there and everything. We're all excited about that. When the phone rings and it is Bolus on the phone, and he says, I hope you haven't forgotten about Saturday. I said, Saturday? What? Oh, yeah, of course not. No. He says, of course you know that this is summer formal. Summer formal? Oh, yeah, that's right. I had just rented a summer formal, you know, for the prom, so I'm immediately thinking, another $9. Summer formal. Yeah, well, where is it, Bolus? The Polish American Hall on 179th Street. And East Chicago. Okay, Bolus. I'd never been in the Polish American Hall. This was a new world to me completely. Absolutely. Well, that Saturday, we all gathered together for protection. Me and Flick and Schwartz, all of us wearing our white coats, you know, we're with the funny little carnations, and we don't know what to do. I've never been to, you know, this is the first wedding I've ever been to, but Bolus, a wedding, you know, it's terrible. Well, we're all sort of huddling together, and we get in Flick's Chevy, and we take off, and we're all sitting there kind of silent, and once in a while, Schwartz says, do you know this girl? I said, well, no, I don't know. And we arrive out in front of the Polish-American Hall, and let me tell you, you never saw more Polish-Americans in your life. Gigantic mustaches, you know. And they're real. There's nobody more jovial or manic than a Polish wedding. A Polak at a wedding is something to see, believe me. You can't believe it. And they are yelling and hollering, and you smell the salami, you know, and everything is ready there. And you can hear inside the Polish-American Hall, the Polish-American wedding polka band. They do nothing but play weddings, you know. It is going full blast. You can hear the accordion. They always have a guy playing a clarinet slightly out of tune, just vaguely sharp. There's a guy sitting back there on the trap drums, and they're all wearing derby hats. It's going like that. And you can hear the sound of these guys jumping up and down in there, hopping up, and you can feel the ground literally shake under your feet. I am out on East Chicago Boulevard. I've never been anything like this, and I could just hear jumping up and down. Well, we go into the hall, and they're all standing. Guys are drinking beer and hollering out in front, you know, and fat ladies in flowered dresses are out there with big hats. And we go in, and there is the first Polish wedding I have ever seen. They are going full blast. Let me tell you, there's more ham, more salami. There is more sauerkraut. There is more Polish cabbage. There is everything there. It's a great, big, fantastic thing. And the wedding has already occurred. Apparently, the wedding had occurred at another church. And Bolas spared us that. And we were now at what the big reception. And there they are. There is this unknown girl out there. And she is hopping around, dancing a polka, and of course all the rest of the people are hopping. But she is obviously the bride. She has this bride dress, a long white thing. They go for that big thing with all kinds of rhinestones, pearls all over it. And from head to foot, she is covered with $10 bills. They have pinned $10. Have you ever seen a Polish wedding with the thing? Yeah, the whole thing is, if you're going to dance with the bride, you pin a $10 bill on her, or whatever the traffic will bear, you know? And that was the whole thing. And, of course, the whole idea of this was that the young couple will then be able to buy that atrocious bedroom suite and matching living room suite, or suit, as they call it, at the Fritas Furniture Company, the one with the bright red mohair with the purple tiger there on the, you know, that one, with the carved arms and the whole. Well, they are jumping up and down out there, and I see this girl and standing sort of off on the side there talking to guys, wearing a cutaway coat and looking like he's a squeezed tube of toothpaste as Bolas. Looks very funny. His head is shaved, you know. They get a very close haircut. It goes all the way up the side. And Bolas is standing. His eyes are kind of bugging. He's got this high collar, and he's sweating a little bit, and he's been drinking beer and everything. He's a man now. See, they let him drink beer and brandy and all that stuff. And he's sweating, and he's sort of standing there with the striped pants. And immediately we bug over, "Hey, Bolas, how are you, Bolas?" And he turns, he's very formal. He says, "Oh, hello, how are you? And it's Bolek, you know, there's this girl out there. Well, we can't contain ourselves. We want to find out, who is this chick? You know, who is this? And Mrs. Bolas, who is Bolas's mother, the little short, fat lady who spoke hardly any English, and at that point, all of us had learned to kind of pidgin Polish, which we spoke to her at her house. Hold up, and we yell and holler, and we hit her, you know, we're dumping up now. And she's like an apple, you know, her head looks exactly, she's so happy. She's red, you know, and jumping up and down, sweating and yelling. And his father is standing over the car. His father was a man who was born with black suspenders on. You know, the big wide suspenders and the white shirt with the big billowy, obviously the sleeves, they buy them four sizes too big because they'll shrink. And he's wearing all that kind of stuff, and he's got this black suit and a derby hat, and he's sweating. And he spoke no English at all. You could get nothing out of him. But Bolas, you could, you know. So finally, after about 20 minutes, Flick brings it up in his blunt, idiotic way. He says, "Hey, Bolas, what is this? Who is this chick?" Well, Bolas says, "That's Anne. That is my wife." Says, "But who is she? What is this? Who is she?" And in the meantime, Schwartz is out there dancing with her. He has pinned a half a dollar on her, you know. He's out there dancing. And Bolas is watching. He's looking proudly. And Flick then presses the point. He says, "How come we never saw her?" And then came the bomb. Bolas says, "Well, I never saw her either, till last week." "You never saw her till last week?" He had told me that they were going to get married weeks before, you know. What is this? I said, "Bolas, what do you mean? Come on, don't put us on. You've been running around. You've been on Wednesday nights when we don't see you. You know, I bet, ha, 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 ha." He says, no, that's true. I didn't know Anne until last week. We met last week when we were preparing for the wedding." And he said it with the most casual, just like this, you know, just like I'm saying it. Yeah, well, we met at, you know, we're. I said, "Bolas, what is this?" He said, "Oh, well, my mother and father picked her." "Your mother and father picked her?" Well, we were, you know, here we stood around, and it was just completely, we were stunned. Flick, Schwartz, myself, This is like another world. Your mother and father picked her. You don't know her. And so Schwartz finally came off the dance floor and he says, hey, you know, she's pretty nice. That's quite a chick you got there, Bolek. Ah. And Bolek says, thank you very much. I'm glad you like my wife. We were outsiders. And this whole crowd in the entire Polish-American organization were jumping up and down. They accepted this as casually as you accept the fact that the sun is going to come up tomorrow morning over the East River. They just accepted it. And Schwartz, of course, is now he's really fascinated. Flick and all of us, well, how does it work? And Bola says, well, of course, you see, in our way, and he starts to talk ethnic. What we would call ethnic here in New York. He says, in our way, of course, we believe in arranged weddings. And my wedding was arranged some time ago between my parents and Anne's parents. And Anne was not in the area. Anne was going to school somewhere, and we never met. What do you mean to tell me, Bolas? He says, oh, yes, yes, indeed. And so... Schwartz is sort of standing, and Flick is kind of standing. I said, well, gee, congratulations, Bolas. You know, you were pretty lucky, you know. And he says, well, I think I'm fortunate. And there's little Anne out there, you know. She's stacked all the right ways, you know. She's hopping up and down. And I'm thinking of what could really have happened, what will eventually happen. And so we get into the car, me and Schwartz and Flick, and we are driving along through the area where we go scragging. And Schwartz says, hey, how about some scragging? And Flick says, no, I don't think so. I don't feel like it. I don't know. I just don't feel like it. And I didn't feel like it either. Either than Schwartz. And so we're driving back home. We go past the Maddox Diner, the big all-American diner. We stop and we have a root beer. And on the way home, we're talking this whole thing over. And, of course, all three of us were completely stunned. This is completely out of our world. And finally, I get home, and my mother says, how did you like the wedding? Well, how can you answer a question like that when you're confronted with a thing like that? How did you like the wedding? You know, it was such a weird scene. And I said, well, Ma, you know, did you ever hear of an arranged wedding? And she said, what do you mean? I said, well, an arranged wedding, this girl that Bolas married I don't know how they did it, but they got together, the mother and father or something, and they decided that they were going to get married the week they got out of high school. And she said, what? I said, yeah, it's all arranged. And my mother sits down there. She thinks about this for a second. She says, that's got some points. I said, what do you mean, Ma? She had been seeing some of the chicks I'd been going out with, you know. She says, you know, there's some points. It actually has some good points. And I said, what are you talking about? She said, well, let me tell you about that Eileen Akers, that skinny one that you come around with once in a while. Do you know that chick, you know, what kind of a girl she is? And I said, what, Mom? What kind of a girl is she? She said, well, you'll find out someday. I can tell I'm a woman. I said, well, you know, and here I'm about, you know, in my soul, I'm about 9 years old. And I suddenly realize I'm touching on hornet's nests all over the place. I said, what do you mean, Mom? Now I can't, you know, little Eileen, what do you mean? She says, don't worry, you'll find out one day. Well, I hate to tell you I did. I mean, you know, I hate to tell you I did. And I also hate to tell you this. Bolas is still happily married. And has three kids. Which is very scary. And completely accepts the whole scene. Now there is a weird wedding. All right, now I'll tell you another weird wedding. I have time just for one quick weird wedding that I happen to be an attendant at. One night... During the war, shortly after I had gone in the Army, again, I was still about 17 or 18, something like that, I am down in Florida, and it is hot and steamy and rotten, and three of us go into town, three guys. Now, I don't know whether you know much about the South, but there's a lot of things happen in the South, at least during wartime anyway. And so the three of us go into this little Florida town outside of Palm Beach. And we only had about 3 or 4 hours to kill. We were fooling around. It was hot and steamy. We go to the movie. And in the movie, we meet three girls. And they were just sitting in there. We got talking. And so we walked out of the movie with them, and it was very innocent. We decided to go on our way to get a soda before we go back to camp, and all three of us were walking, and each one of us sort of paired off with one of the girls. You know, we're talking about, yeah, I'm from Chicago, yeah. Oh, well, I'll tell you, you know, yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, it's nothing, really, being a corporal. It's very easy. Of course, you know, they only give this to men of great bearing and men of command material. And so we're talking, and all of a sudden, this guy behind me, whom I barely knew, one of the GIs, barely knew, and he said, hey, Shepard. He says, hey, Shep. And I said, what? He says, would you like to be a witness at my wedding? We met these girls about 9 minutes ago. And I said, what are you talking about? He says, well, Dolores and I have decided to get married. I said, what? Oh, come on, you're putting me on. And Gasser, who was 9.5 feet tall, hits him on top of the head. He goes, boing, you know, like that. He said, all right, come on now, Cliff. Let's cut out the fooling around. Let's go down to the ugly bee there and have a big fat ham. He says, no, come on, we're going to get married. Let's go. You want to go? He says, will you be my witnesses? What do you mean? What? 5 minutes later, all three of us are standing in front of a Florida Justice of the Peace with busted eyeglasses with tape in the middle of them. There's a big neon sign out in front of his place, and it said, weddings performed while you wait. All papers necessary here. Well, we're standing there, and you know, we can't, it's like a surrealistic dream. I'm standing on one side, Gasser is standing on the other, in the middle is Cliff with Dolores. And this guy is saying, by the state laws of the state of Florida, I'm vested with the power to declare you man and wife. Do you, Clifford Johnson, take this girl, what'd you say your name was? Dolores Schaefer. Do you take this girl, Dolores Schaefer, to be your lawful wedded wife? I do. And do you, Dolores Schaefer, do you take Clifford Johnson to be your lawful wedded husband? I do. I now declare you man and wife, and that's $10, please. You know, wait. And here we are, and next thing I know, I'm signing a little thing. You know, it's a Jimmy Schaefer. And Gasser's signing. It says, witnesses. 5 minutes later, we are out in that soft southern Florida air, and the big moon is hanging down, and the wind is blowing through the palm trees, and Gasser and Shepard are going one way, and Clifford and Dolores are going the other.
This is WOR Radio, your station for news.